I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, it's CPS Energy's job to keep the lights on and the AC running in San Antonio, but this is one of the fastest growing cities in America. The weather is getting more extreme, and the demand for more power continues to grow with things like EVs, development, and more data centers. What does the future look like for the municipally owned power company? How to keep the lights on without sending energy bills through the roof? CPS Energy has launched a new round of community engagement events as it updates its long-term power generation strategy and implements its Horizon 2050 framework. CPS President and CEO Rudy Garza joins us to take your calls and questions. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. CPS Energy is asking San Antonio residents a big question. How do you want to keep the lights on for the next 25 years and beyond? The city-owned utility is updating its long-term generation plan under its Horizon 2050 framework, and it says your input will help decide what its future will look like. Starting this week, CPS Energy is holding community meetings. There's one in person today at St. Bridget Catholic Church Hall. That's at 7 p.m. tonight. Also one on Friday at Las Palmas at 3 p.m. They're also going to have a virtual town hall meeting on January 13th. But right now, we're joined by Rudy Garza, the president and CEO of CPS Energy. And we're kicking off your community meetings with a community meeting on the radio. And Rudy Garza, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate you having me on today.
And our phone lines are open. You can call in with your questions and comments about CPS Energy and what the future looks like, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Rudy, tell me about this Horizon 2050 framework.
Well, the one question I get from the business community primarily, but I think every customer in San Antonio should care about the issue of how are we planning for not just the next 5 years, but really into the future for utility infrastructure in particular. You can't, you know, you don't just, you know, start building today and tomorrow you have a power station. You got to plan for that over, you know, time. And so we really wanted to look at, you know, what do we think the future looks like? You know, how do we develop perspectives on what, you know, how our business can change, how San Antonio and our community might change, and put some plans around how we're going to get there. And so Horizon 2050 really gives us a framework for scenario planning around how our industry is going to change over time. And then we have a five-year plan. We've called it Vision 2027, but we're really in trying to stretch that out to 2030. It's always good to have a fresh five-year plan in place and in discussion with our board and discussion with city council and our customers. And so that's the effort we're undergoing right now is to really update what's been a really, I think, successful five-year strategy for us, primarily around generation and how are we going to execute to a generation plan that it's aggressive, but we serve a growing community.
Every community across the country is looking at exponential growth as far as the needs for electricity. And here in the South Texas region, San Antonio area, our needs are probably even higher than most areas. Rapid growth, development, we're seeing data centers wanting to come here. Everything that we're buying uses electricity these days and more of it. What does that look like? How much more electricity are we going to be needing in the future?
Well, we know for a fact that we've got, and we really, data centers are a sizable percentage, but just a percentage of our overall growth projections. We're growing exponentially across the board. I'm setting 30,000 new meters a year for just normal residential commercial growth. But when you look at the really bigger customers, and that for us, don't worry so much about the units, but a customer who uses 40 megawatts or more, a big industrial customer type customer, or what we classify as large loads, we've got like 68 potential projects out there. Not all of them are going to make, but a bunch of them will. And that could increase the need for our load growth could increase. We know for sure over the next 5 years it's going to grow by about a third. So right today our peak load in San Antonio is about 6,000 megawatts. We're going to grow 2,000 megawatts over the next 5 years. So that takes us to 8. But I've got, you know, potentially 12. You know, we could triple our load over time if all the projects that are on the horizon actually show up. So, you know, so I don't know that they're all going to show up, but I know at least half of those are pretty likely to show up. So if I'm not thinking about the future in those terms and actually putting plans together to invest what's going to be $1 billion to $1.5 billion a year in our system over the next decade, then we're going to get behind and we won't be able to catch up.
Right. So this is, I've seen the term high. This is a high investment time for CPS Energy. So talk about, what does that mean?
Well, what that means is we're going to have to invest in every element of our business. We're going to have, you know, what we've done so far, and the reason why now is the right time to be having this conversation with the community is I think we've made a lot of really good progress towards our Vision 2027 strategy. We're ahead of schedule probably on the amount of gas capacity that we know we were going to need as part of our generation plan. We've got more wind and more solar and even more battery storage online, but we've got some active RFP solicitations out right now for particularly more wind, solar, and battery. So we're at a point now where we got to think about, where we got to look at all the variables that went into our original generation plan and update them. Our load projections we know are going to be higher. The cost of everything is going up. So financially, you know, do we have the right numbers in our plan or do we have to refresh those? And what other elements? The federal policy is making it more difficult for us to execute to our generation plan. Customer expectations, I think, you know, change over time. So we're trying to take all of that feedback and present our community with a refreshed version of what we thought about our future 3 years ago. And that's really where we are. But we have to invest in more generation. We've got to continue to expand our service, our distribution lines to get to these new customers. And then we've got a ton of transmission to build to make it all connect.
Right. That means you need copper, you need steel, you need aluminum. These are all things that are being highly tariffed right now.
Sir. Wood poles. I mean, the needs are endless in our business.
And so these things are a lot more expensive now than they were just a year or two ago.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
right.
So what's that mean for your costs?
Well, our costs for just normal products and services that we have to have bread and butter, you know, equipment to run our business, transformers, things of that nature, 25% to 40% is what we've seen those costs go up over the last few years. And they're going to continue to go up. There's nothing in our business that's going to get cheaper, and customer expectations aren't going to change. People aren't going to accept less reliability because they want us to not raise rates. We've got to figure out how to manage those costs in a way that doesn't overburden our customers. But there's no way around the investment we have to make. If you're in the infrastructure business, I don't care if it's water, electricity, natural gas, roads, whatever, you know, home, you know, new home building for, you know, we got to have affordable housing for our community as well. All of that is infrastructure that requires investment.
So you said the magic words about raise rates. We're going to hit a break right now. I don't want to get into it just yet. We'll get it on the other side of this break. But where we'll talk about conversations that you're having with the city council. City council has to approve rate increases. This is a city-owned utility, and we have to inform the people about why these rates are going up and what that looks like and when that could happen. And we're going to get some callers in on the conversation. We have Henrietta and Jennifer. I'll get you on air when we come back with Rudy Garza. And the number to call in If you've got a question, a comment, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we're having a conversation with Rudy Garza, the CEO, president of CPS Energy, giving us an update about their Horizon 2050, their efforts to get San Antonio ready for the new energy challenges. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Rudy Garza is in the studio with us today, president and CEO of CPS Energy. He's given us an update on the Horizon 2050 framework, the CPS Energy's their long-term vision for how they're going to prepare for the future. Lots of energy needs, lots of needs for the entire community. And also, they're having an in-person community meeting at 7 p.m. at St. Bridget Catholic Church Hall. That is today. And also one on Friday at Las Palmas. That's going to be at 3 p.m. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Henrietta has called in. And Henrietta, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I would like to suggest that CPS at least donate to in the senior centers to energy-saving light bulbs, because they cannot afford the expensive light bulbs. Not only that, those the light bulbs are more expensive, and the new ones that are out, they don't burn as much electricity, but give more light.
All right, Henrietta, thank you for that question. Rudy Garza, what's up with these light bulbs, and what kind of assistance do you have for like senior centers?
Well, first off, let me thank, Henrietta, affectionately referred to as Queta in our community, is a frequent flyer at our board meetings. So, Queta, thank you very much for always paying attention to what we're doing at CPS Energy. We appreciate you. We give away all kinds of energy savings, supplies for homes. And any one of our 3,000 events that we do a year, we are 10 places a day, 6 days a week in the community talking to our customers about how to save money. And we actually have an energy efficiency packet that we give to anybody who shows up. It's a box full of all kinds of goodies, and light bulbs are in there as well. Henrietta, we will certainly make sure that we're paying proper attention to our seniors and getting out that equipment as much as we possibly can. But I would just tell anybody that is looking to find ways to save money on their bills monthly to call 210-353-2222, which is our call center, and set up a energy efficiency appointment. We'll come to your house. We'll take a look around, and we'll tell you ways we think you can save money.
Windows are a good thing.
Yes.
Get those windows replaced. But that can be expensive. What are some other things that people can do right now to lower their energy bills?
Well, whenever we switch from winter to summer or summer to winter is always a good time to make sure that you're changing out your filters on your air condition. If you have gas heat, getting somebody out to check your gas heating system to make sure it's functioning properly is a good safety tip. And just making sure that you're turning off the things that you're not using on a regular basis. Even leaving your phone chargers in can have very minimal usage, but it's there.
24/7.
Yeah, 24/7. So just pay attention to the things that you can control. And if you see a high bill that looks out of the norm, generally that means there's something operating not properly within your home and or business, and you need to figure out what that is to make sure you get that taken care of. And we actually have, if you sign up for our online portal, Manage My Account, We will send you proactive emails that say, hey, looks like your usage might be up 20-30% year over year. You might want to check, you know, check out what's going on. And that's just a good awareness thing that you can do that that really all it costs you is setting up the account, your online account for you.
Let's go to the caller, Jennifer. Jennifer, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Garza, thank you so much for the information. I'm a widow on a fixed income, so I appreciate it. And had the energy audit, and that was helpful. But, you know, I can't afford to have the entire house with the spray-blown insulation and some of the other more expensive adjustments. But I read online about the plug-in solar cells. What is your thought? Is that bad for the system? Do you feel like that's a individual solar cells are a thing of the future that could give us more energy independence? Tell me your thought, and thank you.
Yeah, so are you, Jennifer, these are solar cells. I've seen some advertisements. You plug them into your outlet and it's supposed to supplement or provide energy into your home. And I, from what I've seen on YouTube about these things, I don't think they really work. But Rudy Garza, what can you tell me?
Well, anything our customers can do to create energy independence, I'm all for. If it is a technology that works, that saves you money, then I want our customers to feel like they're going to be supported by the utility. Because what that does for us in the bigger picture is it allows us to, it lengthens our existing generation. If a customer puts solar panels on the house, for instance.
Yeah, but this is a different kind of technology.
Yeah, I mean, there are different types of solar technology. Like you can put a solar light, for instance, on the outside of your home.
Sure.
That actually does work. And we have technology that we suggest where it's going to be really difficult to pull in a line that's going to cost a lot of money. You know, the right option might be a solar cell, but you got to do some research on the type of technology that you're picking. And again, if you have any questions, you can always call us. And the same group that goes out and does the weatherization work in our community can give you some feedback on whatever technology you're looking at that we think may or may not work appropriately.
So these are solar cells that you buy online, and you plug it directly into your wall outlet, and they are telling you that will help power your entire house and reduce the load that you get from the grid. But it's more complicated than that,
That's right.
And it's really not a good fit for, I think, the way that many, especially older homes, are built. And so I think there's a lot of I'm very suspicious of anything that's advertised online. There's a lot of flim-flam going on, and I would be very careful before investing in those things.
Yeah, again, all our customers have to do, we are the energy experts in San Antonio. Call us, and we will give you appropriate feedback on whatever technology you're thinking about.
All right, let's go to the next caller. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Catherine. And Catherine, you're on the air.
Thank you, David. Hey, Rudy, when are you going to develop a nonprofit rate? The residential rate is a good one. The commercial rate is quadruple what the residential pays. We're in between. We're the do-gooders of the community. We need to be taken care of as we take care of the community. So when are you going to develop a nonprofit rate? We need it now.
Interesting. Catherine, great question. A nonprofit rate, do other communities have that kind of a thing?
I don't know that other communities have necessarily a nonprofit rate, although I'll certainly look into that. I think depending upon, you know, how big of a nonprofit you have, it's more about your usage and what your usage profile looks like, consistent with the other customers in our community who use that type, whose profile is similar. Most nonprofits in our community probably look more like small businesses and get a small business rate, which is closer to a residential rate than what a big business might look like. So I think it's always good for us to make sure that we're thinking about things the right way. But, you know, we look at customer classes based on usage and profiles that are similar so that we, you know, because at the end of the day, when the way rates are structured, It's about, you know, how are you using our system and are we assigning the right costs associated with that usage of our system so that you're paying your fair share and everybody else is paying their fair share in a similar manner. So it's less about the specifics of being a nonprofit and more about your user profile that drives how you're charged.
Right. So, well, let's talk about rates a little bit more then. It's been reported that you will be going to city council next year and asking for a rate adjustment. So what's that look like?
Well, I don't know that we're going to ask for a rate adjustment. I think we'll need, you know, some additional rate support to try to accomplish the things that we've laid out in our strategic plan. But what we have agreed to as part of our overall strategy is that we need to have more regular conversations with our community about our financial condition. Because at the end of the day, my job is to deliver a reliable system. And I've got to do the best I can to control costs as we go. But as we talked about, you know, there are things I can't control, like, you know, the cost of, you know, wire going up. So we were actually supposed to have this conversation, David, last year. And because of some of the moves that we've made, buying additional power plants, we brought in some additional wholesale revenue, we were able to push that conversation off to next year. So next year, as part of our budget conversations, which will start in February, and then probably, I would say probably later on in the year, SAWS will be in the spring. And then I'm hopeful we can come in right after that and have a conversation with our community about where we're at, what the need might be and why, and then we'll go from there. So I would expect us to have a conversation. But I'll tell you this, you know, we went, you know, close to 9 years prior to me becoming CEO without any rate increases, and that really put us in a hole. We weren't making the investments we needed to make. It got really difficult to manage a growing system.
Because you were kicking maintenance down the road.
Well, we were doing the maintenance we had to do. We weren't making proactive investments in the future of our system, which I think, you know, especially on the generation side of our business. And we got behind in that, which is what we've been trying to catch up on. So I think it's healthy for a community-owned utility like CPS Energy to be having this conversation at least every other year to make sure that that the community agrees with our strategy and what it's going to take to get there.
But, you know, just throwing back to what we said earlier about all the growing needs, we know there's going to be more need for electricity in the area, a lot more needs. And so by not looking at that and preparing for it and building for that, it becomes, we see some, compromises on things that should be non-negotiables, things like reliability, affordability,
yes,
and
sir.
Access to clean energy.
Yes, sir. There are always multiple ways we can get to where we're trying to go. We're always looking for the most affordable way to ensure that, you know, we're managing those costs over time. And so when you get into a situation where you feel like the community is not even willing to entertain the conversation, then it forces us to maybe not always choose the lowest cost option. You choose the option that's available to you because, you know, doing it the right way by going in and saying, hey, we're going to spend, you know, $1 billion on this, because everything we do, we're talking billions of dollars of investment, you know, for the largest municipally owned electric and natural gas utility in the country.
Yeah. So and then you got to take care of your people.
And we got to take care of our people. And I'll tell you, I think we are fair with how we compensate our people. But I want the best. San Antonio should want the best, you know, employees we can get our hands on. You know, want us to be competitive so that we can hire people when we need to hire them and make sure we're taking care of our linemen, who have one of the most difficult jobs in any industry. And so I'll tell you, I think we do a pretty good job of trying to maintain fairness and equity in our pay to ensure that we're taking care of our folks.
We have to compete also,
yes, sir,
for another.
And by the way, that's with both the private sector and the public sector. We're not competing with a city for talent. We're competing with other energy companies with the big Exxon and BP and Chevron and all these major, energy companies, and also other publicly owned, you know, electric and natural gas utilities. So we got to find balance in there. But I'll tell you, I'm not going to skimp when it comes to my people.
You know, and it's those those are the guys and gals who come out when the weather's bad.
That's right.
And your power got knocked out, and they come out in miserable weather conditions and are figuring out ways to get you reconnected. So they're doing really hard work.
Yes, sir.
And so taking care of them has got to be part of the whole picture for what we have. So we're getting ready. We're going to take another break here. I'm going to get Jeffrey on the air in a bit when we come back from the break. If you got a question or a comment for Rudy Garza, the president and CEO of CPS Energy, what the future needs for San Antonio are, what are you seeing in your world? What do you want him to know about how the energy bills are impacting you? And where should we be going in the future for power generation? You know, this is our conversation. Let's have it. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR Talk, and the source returns after this break.
TPR stands apart in today's crowded media landscape. We bring calm to a noisy world and offer space for thoughtful dialogue. Now, as we enter the new year without federal funding for public media, we are stretching to keep this essential service available to everyone. Your year-end gift helps us continue providing the trusted journalism you rely on. Visit TPR.org to make your gift today.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is growing fast, and CPS Energy is right there every step of the way. As a matter of fact, they got to be two steps ahead of San Antonio growth because they have to have the energy and infrastructure in place as San Antonio grows. We're seeing a boom in these data centers. They're going to take a lot of power. But, you know, they're also doing other things for us as well. That's what makes the internet work, and we're going to talk about that. But how is CPS Energy doing? They have a plan now, Horizon 2050. They have a vision for what the future looks like, but they need your input on what they're doing. At 7 o'clock tonight at St. Bridget Catholic Church Hall, they're having an in-person community meeting. Another one at 3 o'clock on Friday at Las Palmas. They have a virtual town hall meeting on January 13th, and they want to hear what your expectations are for how CPS Energy should be serving San Antonio. And you can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Jeffrey. And Jeffrey, you're on the air with Rudy Garza, President and CEO of CPS Energy.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you sound good.
Okay. My question is that I understand the supply and demand, and you have all these data centers doing negotiating with a cheaper rate than your typical consumers. And I'm just wondering why you've chosen the consumers to pick up the shortfalls in the rates when they have no other choice but to buy electric from you. So that's about my question.
All right, Jeffrey, that's a good question. So are these data centers, do they get a cheaper rate than residential?
Well, again, they fall into the customer class based on how they're using our product. And so I don't know they get a cheaper rate. They get a rate that's commensurate with how they're using our system. Now, I will tell you that it's not structured in a way for them to get a deal on the back of our existing customers. In fact, I've been very, clear and purposeful in my comments that data centers will pay their fair share. So if we've got infrastructure to build in to get to them so that we can connect them, then they're going to pay for that. And the contracts that we force these guys to sign are 100 pages long of expectations, so that if we build more infrastructure based on what they're asking for than they actually use, guess what? We're going to claw that infrastructure back so that we're paying attention to overbuilding, which absolutely does have financial implications for our entire system. So we're going to hold them accountable for what they're asking us for. The revenue that's associated with them also benefits the entire system. So it kind of works both ways. It's not just about cost. It's about how they're using our product, the revenue they're bringing in, which is good revenue for us. The more revenue we get, the less we have to ask our existing customers for. City gets, you know, revenue back as part of their return, and there's also tax revenue associated with that. So, and at the end of the day, David, we have an obligation to serve. If a customer shows up and does all the things we ask them to do, then we're going to have to connect them because that's our job. We're a singly certified utility for the San Antonio market. And so we're going to do all the things we have to do in balance to ensure our existing customers aren't overburdened with infrastructure that really is going to serve these larger loads. So we're paying attention to that, and it's my commitment that we're going to make sure that we take care of our existing customer base.
So a residential ratepayers like myself, I'm not going to be paying to subsidize a data center.
Absolutely not.
Data centers, they run 24/7.
That's right.
When there is an energy shortfall, hopefully that never happens again, but it has happened, will data centers be asked to power down, and will they have to do that? Is that part of the contract?
Well, all of our existing commercial customers are asked when in those moments where the conditions get tight to both voluntarily and through some programs that we have for demand response are able to back off their load to make sure that we have plenty of power to serve our residential customers primarily. Senate Bill 6, last legislative session up in Austin, created a framework for how we're going to treat data centers across the entire ERCOT market. And part of that expectation was that in those moments where the market might get tight, they're going to have to come offline, at least in part, with some backup generation or however they're going to go about doing that, or just transferring some of their load to other data centers across the country and not using as much energy here. And the Public Utility Commission up in Austin is working through the rulemaking on that particular piece of legislation. But yes, data centers will be expected to be able to reduce their load when we get into emergency conditions.
Next caller, let's go to Scott. And Scott, you're on the air with Rudy Garza, President and CEO of CPS Energy.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I have a two-part question. One, to review what you've already told us. One is, are we having a situation of if we build it, they will come, or more is it they're coming, and so we better build it? Which is the bigger case? And two, assuming that we need all this extra energy, and it takes 10 years to build a nuclear power plant, where are we going to get all this extra energy?
All right. Well, Scott, thank you for those good questions. For number one, build it and they will come, or are they coming?
No, they're coming. It's the latter of the two scenarios. They're coming, and we have to plan for how to serve the load we expect to show up based on the contracts that are being signed with those customers today. And it's not just data centers. We got industrial customers. We've got advanced auto manufacturing and things that are already in San Antonio where expansion is happening that we have to plan appropriately for. So we're not going out and speculatively building anything. Now, in the generation.
In fact, they're queuing up.
That's right. I mean, when we buy generation, we're buying generation knowing we're going to grow into it. And when we have more generation than we need, we're selling that power onto the market, and that wholesale dollar is one less dollar we have to ask our retail customers for. So the two work hand in hand to make sure that our rates are held in check, you know, over time. The second part of that.
So I just want to review that.
Yeah.
So any excess power, CPS Energy is able to sell that on the open market.
That's correct.
And that's so it goes to Houston, Dallas, Austin, or whoever else might need that power.
Correct.
So, and that is actually generated at a profit.
Yes, sir. Well, it's not a profit to us, a profit to the city of San Antonio.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It brings revenue in to support our overall, you know, investment need.
Okay, so that's happening. The other part about, well, we're going to need extra power. Where is this extra power going to come from? And the caller brought up nuclear power.
Well, again, we bought gas generation down at Corpus Christi and Laredo, and most recently in and around the Houston area. The electric grid all is connected together. So, you know, you get credit for the generation you're putting onto the system, and then, you know, you commit the portion you need to serve San Antonio, you know, from that total, and whatever's left is what gets sold back onto the market if it's necessary, right? So that's how the structure works. So we've done a good job, I think, of continuing to diversify our generation portfolio. We're getting our generation every way you can get it in Texas, we're getting it. We do have nuclear power plants south of Houston that we own 40% of
Matagorda
right now.
Bay.
That's right, just south of Galveston. You know, we've got a good partner there. I think we have some opportunities to expand that that particular asset in the future with some new technology that's coming. But it's very, very difficult in today's market. It takes too much time from a regulatory perspective, and it costs a whole lot of money to build a new nuclear power station. So I think small modular nuclear is a technology that I'm excited about, that we're exploring, that will be available to us hopefully sooner rather than later. I think that's the way nuclear will expand. But I think it's going to be really difficult to build the large-scale nuclear reactors in the way we did back in the 70s and 80s.
All right, let's go to the next caller. That'll be Blake. And Blake, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. So I have 3 points. First, why do we not have competition courtesy of another power provider in San Antonio? The second is going to be, how are you going to offset the debt courtesy of the gas bill that CPS has? We saw those ads running constantly for a while. And then the last one, what did you do with the grant that was received for the microgrid setup? It's like $30 billion. This is a bit of an old story, 2023, but I was curious what came of that. Thank you very much.
All right. Competition. So because this is, municipally owned utility, you're exempt from having to have multiple different energy companies. But, so our competition may be like, is our bill cheaper than, say, a bill that you would get in Dallas or Austin? And Austin is also municipally owned, Dallas, Houston.
Yeah. So I was in the private sector when competition was passed, in the late 90s, and we moved into competition in 2001. Municipally, publicly owned, that's both municipally owned utilities and cooperatives in rural areas were exempted. They were allowed to opt in if they chose to. There's only been one, by the way, in Texas over that time that's opted in, which is Lubbock. And they did so for some very specific reasons. So competition in San Antonio only happens if there's a legislative change that forces it, or if San Antonio chooses to opt in, proactively. In San Antonio, the reality is we've got the lowest combined electric and gas rates in the state of Texas. So it's not price. You're not going to get a price advantage by moving into competition because we're already one of the lowest utility rates in the state of Texas. And we have some of the highest reliability. Maybe the El Paso, because they have no trees out there, might be a little bit more reliable. But otherwise, San Antonio is more reliable, certainly by exponentially more reliable than Houston, Dallas, some of the other areas around the state. So you have to ask yourself what the benefit of the competition coming to San Antonio is outside of just being able to choose your provider. If that's your deal, then I understand it, but it doesn't mean you're going to get better service or get it at a cheaper cost in San Antonio.
We got to hit a break here. We'll get to the other 2 points when we come back, and we'll get Jeff on the air when we come back as well. And if you got a question or a comment for Rudy Garza, President and CEO of CPS Energy, call in. The number is 833-877-8255-833-TPR-TALK, and we'll be right back. To The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies with us in studio. Rudy Garza, President and CEO of CPS Energy. He's taking your questions and calls, 833-877-8255. So let's go to the other 2 points that the caller had about a debt. We have to offset with the gas bill. What's all that?
Well, during Winter Storm Uri back in 2001, the gas market got way out of whack. And, and generally during the wintertime when things get cold, the gas market, some of the smaller wells start closing in, which drives the price of natural gas up. Henry Hub, Permian, doesn't matter where you're getting it, the price is going to go up.
Because they were frozen at the wellhead.
Yeah, that's right. And so you saw a lot of utilities that saw a billion-dollar bills. Any gas utility that serves retail customers saw a massive gas bill because they were pretty much beholden to whatever the spot price was at that time, including us. We had, you know, about $1 billion worth of gas costs. But we believe when you looked at the analysis that there was a case to that there's a case to be made, which we're fighting in court right now, that, you know, that it was unreasonable. They weren't doing it, spending any more money to get more gas out of the ground. The market's just allowed the unfettered go crazy when you're in what's truly a force majeure situation.
It was gouging.
Yeah, 15,000% increases. So the gentleman that
It's not like when there's a crisis, they can't raise the gasoline prices at the corner station.
That's right.
When there's a hurricane coming, there are laws about how much you can jack up a price for a gallon of water or whatever. That is as illegal gouging.
That's right.
Why is this any different?
Well, because those price gouging laws, you know, specifically, if you look at them, you know, they exempt the commodities like natural gas. We're going to make that case in court. You know, we were able to settle a good majority of those cases, but the two largest suppliers during that time period, we have not been able to settle with. So we're going to have our day in court. So the ads that you're seeing running, you know, you can decipher for yourself where you think they're coming from, but we're not going to allow, you know, big oil and gas executives in Dallas-Fort Worth to tell San Antonians and certainly try to tell CPS Energy what to do. We believe that whether we win or lose in court, we're going to make the case, and we think that's in the best interest of our ratepayers.
And his final question was about a microgrid grant that we got in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, that project is going forward. We are creating microgrids in kind of portions of our community that allow us to create some resiliency. We're going to spend $30 million of our own money, and the federal government came through with $30 million Department of Energy grant to help us move those projects forward. With the change in administration, there's been a little bit of uncertainty on how those grants are going to move forward. So, you know, we're monitoring kind of the guidance we get out of the Department of Energy on that. But those microgrid grants are those projects are moving forward, and we're going to invest those dollars.
So going back to the winter storm, the Valentine's Day winter storm, and the frozen gas pipelines, the legislature passed laws saying they needed to fix that. But as my understanding is, there are still gaps in the way that natural gas is delivered. It was optional. It's not really complete. And we could still have that situation again. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. I'll tell you what we've done in San Antonio. Beforehand, we really weren't getting much natural gas out of the Eagle Ford Shale. Most of it was coming from Permian, which is susceptible to the frozen wellheads and the Houston, the Henry Hub in Houston. We are now fully diversified. We can get natural gas out of any of the hubs in Texas. We've invested in infrastructure to create some flexibility in how we move gas around our system to make sure there's no part of our system that's gonna see an issue in gas delivery. We still got a little work to do in that regard, but I think our gas system is more resilient because of some of the decisions we've made over the last 5 years to invest where it's going to help us the most. And primarily now I can get gas from a good supplier out of the Eagle Ford Shale, and that's going to be real beneficial if we ever see that issue happen again.
All right, next caller, Jeff. And Jeff, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. It's a great show today. I have three questions, / points, on there all about solar. Number one is, are these data centers augmenting with solar? Are they building solar on their roofs to help offset some of their usage? And second would be residential solar, because of the loss of the federal grants for solar. And third would be new residential buildings. Why aren't they being built with solar? Thank you.
Okay. So these data centers, I've heard a lot about how they want to build energy generation behind the meter. So, you know, when things go wrong, they can generate their own, and some of them have their own gas-powered plants and blah, blah, blah. But when they buy solar, basically they're buying it from off-site solar, aren't they?
Right. Well, look, these data center customers are some of the most sophisticated customers in the country. I mean, you're talking about the big boys, Microsoft, Google, you know, these massive entities that have sustainability goals of their own. And so a lot of them will go and work to source, you know, enterprise scale solar, the kind of the way we do, to try to offset, you know, some of their own carbon reduction goals. But I think you're going to see large loads of all kinds that want to create resiliency, that will do it always. That maybe they put a small gas generator to supplement their usage. They'll put solar, they'll put batteries. I think they're going to use all the tools available to them to try to create the resiliency necessary so that if we ever ask them to go offline, they're able to do that. Solar doesn't help you in the wintertime unless you have a battery associated with it. So we're talking to customers about how to create the highest levels of resiliency that they're looking for. But you know, these large loads are very sophisticated, and they're going to figure out how to get the infrastructure right. Residential, I'll tell you, there has been some really challenging federal policy changes that are going to make solar for residential customers more costly. And I think you will see the market start to scale back some of the proactive rooftop solar that you're seeing. But I think for customers that can afford it, they'll continue to do so. We're looking at creating a program where we can pair solar with batteries for people that can afford it to go do that. And we're creating some community solar programs for our low income to the extent that those folks can want to participate in it too. So we're trying to offer to create as much diversity in our programs that allow us to offer customers what they're looking for in San Antonio. And then for new residentials, I will tell you this. I think there are a lot of developers who are looking to build communities that are more sustainable. So that include batteries, that include rooftop solar as a standard.
But don't we require new homes to be built so they could have solar?
They're not required, but for like batteries, they have to be EV capable. So the way they're wiring the homes now has to have a plug, so that if somebody, you know, has a EV that they want to plug in, you know, that the Unified Development Code has taken some of the EV policy into account to try to force the issue in that regard. So I think there are policy changes that are happening for new residential that are going to make those systems, you know, more capable going in.
All right, Steven, let's get Steven on the air. Go ahead, Steven.
Hi, I have a question regarding kind of residential solar, specifically the energy buyback rate that is utilized right now. Last time I checked, it was about 10 cents to the dollar, whereas other companies throughout the state go up to basically a one-to-one ratio on that. So in an effort to try to prioritize or incentivize individuals to get that residential solar, is there any consideration to up that buyback rate?
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Rudy, you're on.
Well, let me tell you, a lot of other utilities don't give you a net metering provision the way we do. So, you know, when you're generating power for your home, you get it at the full retail rate, which is, you know, for us is right around, you know, 12 cents or so a kilowatt hour. That doesn't exist in other markets. So the rate we pay you as a result of the net metering policy that we have here in San Antonio, which we'll always have to look at and consider as we have conversations with our community about rate support. What you get is what it costs us to buy power in the open market. That's the rate you're getting, which is why it's lower, because generally we're going to get a pretty good rate in the open market. So we give you the avoided cost rate that we pay for the amount of power in excess of what you're using that you put back on the system. And I think when you consider the net metering policy with the avoided cost rate, I still think it's a pretty good deal.
So I want to get to this point before we run out of time. San Antonio has a high percentage of low and moderate income households. So let's talk about affordability. How do you evaluate whether a rate proposal, you know, crosses the line from necessary to unaffordable? What are we doing for our, you know, vulnerable customers who have trouble paying their bills?
Well, remember, last year our board took action to increase our affordability discount for customers who qualify for that. So we're always looking year in and year out at affordability and how we can maximize the amount of resources that we have available to us. We have also, through our REIT board, which is myself, County Judge Peter Sakai, and now Mayor Jones, REAP also last year increased the amount of assistance that we provide through our Residential Energy Assistance Partnership. Every time we go to the city, to our board and city council to consider a rate adjustment, we also consider an adjustment to that affordability discount, which you and I pay. Mm-hmm. So every other customer who is not on the affordability discount pays a little more so that we can buy down the rate for the customers who can least afford to pay. And we have a pretty good handle in San Antonio about who those customers are.
All right. Well, Rudy Garza, thank you so much for coming in the studio today, President and CEO of CPS Energy. We love having you here. You said there's a way people virtually.
Yeah, there's one more plug. I would suggest anybody who has feedback for us, go to cpsenergy.com/path forward, PATHFORWARD. And that is the place that we're collecting input on our longer term strategy. So thank you.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.